And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Man, covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about this show. Goes, y'all, from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. From Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I'm talking all the way down to that prettiest little town on the plains called Auburn. I mean to say, we even have big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, we got plenty on tap right now. Text lines are indeed open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it, same number for both. Let's jump on in here because this is going to be a topic that takes some unpacking, y'all. The war in Ukraine. Let's think back a little over 3 years ago. We have Biden in office. And his foreign policy is based on the single word, don't. And that's it. That's foreign policy. What would you say to Mr. President Putin? Don't. Okay. Well, he did. So, you know, that how'd that work out? It's an amazing thing when you see a position of strength being leveraged in foreign policy. Biden never did that. He led from the rear. He kowtowed. And there's a vast difference between the doctrine of appeasement or containment even, a containment at best, appeasement at worst, and actual deterrence. Deterrence means you give them all the reasons why they better not. And all it takes is them knowing they better not. Whereas appeasement is, can we buy your happiness? If we give you something, would you say okay? And then even containment is, we're not going to do anything, but we're going to stand over here. Don't cross that line. And that's, under Biden, that's where we were. We were at appeasement at worst, containment at best. Under Trump right now, what we're seeing is a foreign policy that is leveraging strength, and it's for the purpose of deterrence when necessary, or for that matter, for gaining the upper hand pretty much always. You can tell who's been the successful businessman, right? Joe Biden, Donald Trump, which one has written a book called The Art of the Deal? Well, here we are. So right now, we're at the three-year-plus anniversary-ish, three-year-plus of the war in Ukraine. When it first kicked off, I think the vast majority of America would say, we were incensed. How dare the former Soviet Union, the Russian bear, how dare they march across the border and start seizing territory, like by force? There was no negotiation. It was bad enough that they sucked in the entire Crimean Peninsula in, 2014 under Obama? And then nobody did anything. They're just like, it's ours, and they just took it. Well, Ukraine said, so, and by the way, I need to paint a picture for you. Picture, and I'm going to try and picture one. Picture like, say, the state of Florida, and the northern section to include the panhandle is like Ukraine now, but the lower tier from like Tampa down to the Keys was the Crimean Peninsula. Picture that lower half of Florida just being taken by somebody. And that's what happened in 2014. And suddenly, you have Russia desperately wanting a better warm water port because that gave them, you know, access to the broader open waters of the oceans for their navy, for their own force projection, for their own shipping and commerce, and they basically took it, and it's theirs now. Nobody said boo. By the time Trump took office, nothing was happening. But then you have the Biden administration, which basically projected weakness in the tail end of Afghanistan, and all of a sudden, the world saw a United States that was feckless, that was reckless, and that had no ability to gather itself and to make decisions on the national stage or international stage that seemed to make any sense. And Putin seized on it. All right, fast forward. Everybody thought that war was going to be over in 5 days? It was going to be a 5-day war. It was the great Russian bear. They were going to march across the border and shabam, they were going to be in Kyiv before anybody could breathe. Now, there are several things about why does Russia even want all this? It's geopolitical, but then it's also just down to brass tacks basics. Geopolitical, they don't want another NATO ally on their on their western border. They don't. And there's been talk of whether or not you would see Ukraine join NATO. That creates a problem. That's like, and I get it. At the same time, you know what, Russia, you've been a bad actor for so many years. Why would people not want to be banded together against you? But Russia used that as the excuse. They used that as the, we're securing our borders. We're not going to allow NATO to posture itself immediately upon our border. We need a buffer, and that buffer is named Ukraine. What they also really wanted, though, was they wanted not only the port access they got on the Crimean Peninsula, but they wanted, A, the logistical resources because it was a gateway into Eastern Europe, Poland and the rest. B, they also wanted to get the agricultural capabilities because Ukraine is in many ways the breadbasket of Europe. I mean, the level of row crop farming that takes place there on mass scale is enough to really help the Russian economy. And then number three, there's energy production. The energy production, much of the nuclear energy production in Europe comes out of Ukraine. Go figure. Okay, all that to say, Russia wanted it and wanted it bad, and they decided when they saw Biden being feckless, they thought, you know what, now's the time. And they just went in and tried to take it. Didn't work out so well. Number one, Ukraine was saying, not this time. This was not a you're not taking it. This was a you're not taking it again moment for Ukraine. Are they going to be the nation that just rolls over and takes it on the chin whenever somebody says, you know, boo? And they decided, no, they're not. And the world has sat back, and I'll be honest with you, the world has sat back in admiration at the ability of the Ukrainians to put a spanking on Russian troops. There are estimates right now that Russia has lost upwards of 700,000 men. Would you do me a favor? Look up how many men the United States lost in World War II. The largest war we've ever been in. Well, I'll take it back. If you count the fact that both sides of the Civil War were Americans, but still, let's just take World War II. What total loss?
416,000.
416,000. So Russia has lost more than we, almost, wow, close to twice. But Russia has lost way more right now, we believe, because we can't get good reports, than we lost in all of World War II in 4 years of fighting on mass scale. Okay. That being said, Russia is struggling right now. Russia's on its heels because at home it's very unpopular for the Russian moms to have to see another casket come home and lose their sons, and they're beginning to question why we're in this thing. And then you look at Ukraine and they're going, we're in it. But then you look at the United States. What has been our policy? And I would say this, you are watching a reversal of foreign policy. And by the way, just tell our caller what to take after the break. And I'm going to take this all the way to the break there, JP. But this is going to be a complete reversal of U.S. foreign policy, because U.S. foreign policy as to the conflict in Ukraine up to now has been one of appeasement. Appeasement in a sense, and yet at the same time, there's been no dialogue. We have had appeasement in the sense that they just say, we need more help, and we say, what do you want? And it's everything but U.S. troops. Although, I think there's some reason to believe that we may have had some limited scale of U.S. troops on hand. But we have had, without a plan, we've had an open checkbook that has been going on now for 3 years. We have sent over $175 billion U.S. dollars, not including what may have come from other NATO allies. $175 billion. Now, has the Russian bear been stopped? Yeah, but they continue to creep forward. The five-day war turned into 3 years. It's a slugfest right now. There are actual killing fields where it is just, it's no man's land. They've laid waste to whole sections of eastern Ukraine. It's the largest scale conventional warfare we've seen in Europe since World War II. It's been a proving ground, if you will, for weapon systems. the U.S. Abrams tanks and the M2 Bradley fighting vehicles and drone capability and any number of other pieces that we've given them, the Javelin, oh, man, my gosh, the Javelin, which is made here in Alabama, the Javelin missile, the TOW missile, all of them. We are watching them work in just amazing capacity. However, you also look at it and go, hey, Joe Biden, what was your plan? My plan was we're there as long as it takes. What does that mean? Nobody knows. There was no plan. The plan was an open checkbook. And that is not sustainable. And that's not reasonable. And so let me just quickly encapsulate where we are, and then I'm going to break it down for you in great detail after the break. Where we are right now is that Trump has initiated discussions to resolve the conflict in Ukraine. And his folks are meeting right now, today, meeting right now with Vladimir Putin's folks. Trump allegedly had a phone call with Putin on Sunday. This is all being done unilaterally. Trump's White House, Putin's Kremlin, dialogue direct. They're meeting in person right now in Saudi Arabia. That's happening as we speak. Why is that significant? The left is freaking out because it's significant that Putin came to a table. No one thought he would come to a table. Well, guess what? No one laid out a table before. There's been no table. Well, he shouldn't have to have a table. He's the aggressor. That's right. But you know what? Since it takes two to fight, at least, then guess what? At least two have to come to the table. Right now, one of them's there. Ukraine is saying, we won't participate in this unless we're allowed to be a part of it. They're going to be a part of it. The liberal media is now screaming because Zelensky's not at the table. He's going to be at the table. Let me tell you what you're looking at. This is what is referred to as shuttle diplomacy. Shuttle diplomacy. What that basically means is it's like a mediation as a lawyer. That means that the mediator, in this case the United States, goes back and forth between the parties. Hey, Russia, here's what we're thinking. You do this, this, and this. I'm not doing that. Well, what will you do? I'll do this. All right, stand by. We'll come back to you. And then they go meet with Zelensky. Hey, they'll do this. We're not doing that. You better do something. Here's the thing. As an attorney, I will tell you that some of my best cases have not resolved themselves in a courtroom. They resolve themselves through a negotiated settlement or a mediation, where a mediator, an impartial person, went back and forth between the parties. We actually sat in opposite rooms. They go up and down the hallway. Well, Phil, they're saying this. Well, I'm not doing that. Well, Phil, you have to give something. I'm not going to give something. Well, Phil, we're going to be here all day. And next thing I know, we're dialoguing. Nobody in a mediation goes home with everything they wanted. But everybody goes home resolved if they settle it. I mean, you can actually end the mediation and just stop and go home. But if there's a settlement agreement in a mediation, it's usually by negotiation, and there's not always going to be an opportunity for everyone to claim victory. But everyone will walk away with something. So what are we going to get here? I don't know yet, but I will tell you this. They are in a mediation. As an old soldier, and like many of you are, I can also tell you that every war has to come to its finite end. It has to. You cannot have perpetual war. We don't need to see that on the face of Europe right now. This needs to get over with. And there's been nobody saying anything except don't up to now. And don't didn't do squat. Don't with a checkbook. Don't. How much money you want? Don't. And don't didn't stop Russia. And the checkbook didn't do anything except deplete our resources. And now Trump's coming to the table. And I'm going to tell you all about it more when we get back from this break. All right, take me to the break, JP. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower in here. Let me go to the phones because I know he hung on for a while and I appreciate it. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Mighty fine, sir. And now, after that bumper music, after during the next break, I'm going to have to turn on the squirts at no one like you.
There you go. What's up, man? Go ahead.
Hypocrisy from Russia over all this time, I've always wanted to ask them because they say, we don't want NATO on our border. Well, if they take Ukraine into their possession, technically, they are extending their border closer to a lot of NATO powers.
That's a great point. That's a great point. You know what? I feel like I had thought that at one point and then forgot to say it today, but that's a great point. If you push yourself, I mean, right now Ukraine is the buffer with NATO. So if they, if you seize them, then you're right up against the border of Poland. Guess what? NATO. Wow.
If old Army drill sergeant said, would say to people sometimes, you just came with it down with a bad case of me dumb.
No doubt. All right, man.
There, and that's what they did. You have a good one.
Appreciate Thanks. You, buddy. See you. Yeah. And listen, the folks around, I mean, the vast majority of America does not want to see Russia just win. They don't. But what we also don't want to see is an unfettered spend on a war on a far side of the world without knowing for a fact that there's a plan in place. And oh, by the way, that we're looking at, you know, maybe Europe guarding its own backyard a bit. I will say this. I got a piece here from the Daily Caller. Dateline yesterday. Daily Caller is citing a CNN data reporter report that basically just says they did a bunch of polls. I'll just summarize it for you. They did a bunch of polls, and they said that the vast majority of Americans are now, or a sizable chunk of Americans, it says, are now of the belief that the U.S. has overly backed Ukraine. I would say that's overly financially, because we're not there with troops. We're giving them moral support. We're giving them tariff support on the world stage. I don't know what else might have happened, you know, in the sort of the background that we'll never know about. But we do know this. Checks have been written to the tune of over $175 billion. And we're looking at right now, 62% of Republicans, the polls say that the U.S. support for Ukraine is now too much, which is a big change from where it was 3 years ago. And then you got, oh, by the way, support for Volodymyr Zelensky shifted also dramatically. People are beginning to question who he is. 78% of Americans, according to these polls, desire a negotiated peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. And I think you can feel it. I think it's there. And I don't think anybody's minding the fact that Trump is over there negotiating something. Let me jump in real quick. I got a phone call I'll take with about 1 minute to go here. Robert from Athens. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Oh, yeah. You doing good today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. Most of the world takes its cue from America anyway. And you were talking in your monologue about the censorship going on in other countries.
Right.
Well, I'm pretty sure that all originated here. I imagine they seen what American media was doing to the rest of the world. I mean, to our public, and they took the cue.
I would say that, or at the very least, we were complicit with them, one or the other. But yeah, I mean, just a couple of years ago, the media was hiding the Hunter Biden laptop and all of it, and then suppressing us on freedom of speech and deplatforming the president and all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point, man.
Just, you know, it's bad we have to put up with the ignorance of the media. I don't know. It's hard to say whether they know what they're doing or just the interviewers are just that stupid.
I think it's a yes and a yes. All right, hey Robert, okay. We're heading to a break, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you. All right, yeah. Listen. Take care. We got a lot on tap. I'm going to do more of this. When we get back, I got a whole war and peace in Europe. What's happening? All right, where are they meeting? What are European officials saying? Are they wishing they were at the table? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on a Taco Tuesday. Making you hungry and giving you the news all at the same time. A couple of text messages here just to catch up on. Jerry from Decatur says, right on, Phil, about all you said concerning geopolitical and Russia needs for warm water ports. He said, put your finger on the Black Sea parallel and circle the globe and you will cross New England with nice weather in the summer months for their oligarchs' yachts. Wow, yeah. If borders settle out as they are occupied now, Russia has exactly what they want, airborne. And I agree, and that's a problem. And I don't know that Ukraine is going to settle for the idea of just losing ground because the world asked them to. We'll see. We'll see how this goes. I mean, I think there's going to have to be something in it for Ukraine, too. I mean, why would it not be? It was their country. They're the ones getting beat up right now. Russia's not burning down. There's whole cities that are gone in Ukraine. And Ukraine's people are going to say, who's paying for that? So let me jump into some stuff here in a minute, and I'll tell you what I think is about to happen. Thomas from Athens says Biden's don't foreign policy, not unlike Obama's red lines, cannot just be fecklessness. It must be it must have an agenda, an influence peddling behind it. Said billions made by military hardware suppliers who lobby the administration, some damning materials in a Ukrainian desk drawer or both. It takes a new sheriff and a posse to straighten this out. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was something behind it. Now, listen, if we're selling weapons, somebody has to make them. Whoever makes them has to get paid. I don't mind somebody earning for their, but I don't think that the Javelin missiles being made down in Troy were saying, please keep the war going longer. But as long as you are, they're probably saying, buy our stuff. What needs to happen, though, right now is we need to restock our own storehouses of weapon systems. We need to make sure that we are postured correctly, that our readiness levels are not depleted. And oh, by the way, let's stop spending money over there. We got a southern border that's porous down here. We have security threats on our own sovereign soil right now that are huge, huge, and they've been neglected. Red from Tony, Alabama says, have you heard from Kareem since the election?
Well, we did. Yesterday he called in.
It was.
Ray wasn't listening, but it's actually up on our social media if y'all want to go check it out.
Yeah, where can they find it?
On the Right Side Media's Twitter. Just look up Right Side Media.
It's, you just posted today, right?
There. Yep. So it's pretty good. It's worth the watch, let me say that.
Yeah, so Kareem did call in. By the way, I love it when Kareem calls in. Mm-hmm. It just, you know what? Keeps me on my A game. But he has yet to get me off of my my game. So there's that. All right. So, by the way, he still owes me a steak. Just saying.
He said Ruth Chris.
He said Ruth Chris. He said Ruth Chris. I got a piece here from American Military News. Dateline yesterday. Donald Trump agreed in a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin to start negotiating an end to the war in Ukraine. Keep in mind that what you just heard was that was news right there. Trump and Putin had a phone call. Why is that news? Because Trump and Putin had a phone call. I mean, no one has talked to Putin in years. Trump revealed the conversation, saying the two had a lengthy and highly productive phone call and would start negotiations immediately. And then here's the piece that I want to, here's the other between the lines thing to read. European officials got no advance warning of Trump's call with Putin, according to one official. Others call it a sellout, worrying the U.S. was giving in to Putin's key demands without getting anything in return. Have they ever paid attention to who Donald Trump is? Do they think for a second that you're about to watch Trump lose something? Now, here's an idea. Hey, you guys that are mad, we're not at the table. How come we're not in there? You didn't tell us you're going to make a phone call. We didn't know that phone call was happening. Where have you been for the last 3 years? Which one of you led the delegation to try and resolve this conflict in your backyard? How many of y'all were saying, you know, we got to get this thing over with? I don't recall hearing France. I don't recall hearing Poland. I don't recall hearing Spain. I don't recall hearing any of them. All right, there's that. But then it's also interesting where they are. Here's another piece of geopolitics. This meeting right now is taking place in the Diriyah Palace in Saudi Arabia's capital city of Riyadh. Interesting. Saudi Arabia is more and more trying to posture itself on the world stage as a player. They're doing that for a variety of reasons. Number one, they want to be. Number two, they're countering Iran's influence by exerting themselves on the broader stage. Number three, they're currying favor with the new Trump administration because guess who gets to sell oil and guess who's going to wind up drilling their own oil and impacting their drills? That'd be us. There's a lot to be said about the fact that we are seeing right now Secretary of State Marco Rubio, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and our Special Envoy Steve Witkoff all meeting with Lavrov, the foreign minister from Russia, and his team in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. The other piece of this is Trump let them host it. Didn't have to. They could have met where? Warsaw. They could have met in, I don't know, where. the Baltics. They could have had a meeting somewhere in Portugal. They didn't. Trump said, okay, yeah, let's do it. Let Saudi be the host. That in itself is a whole new day. If you recall back to Trump's first administration, you had the Abraham Accords, right? You had peace beginning to break out in the Middle East. You had no conflict. You had Iran on its heels. And you had, don't forget this, remember that when Trump got sworn into office, he had the first ever major state visit to Saudi Arabia, and they rolled out the red carpet, man, and it was a spectacle. Do you remember this? It was a spectacle. It was something else. It was a dawn of a new relation with Saudi Arabia. Yes, I know there's Wahhabists there. Yes, I know that's where Osama bin Laden was originally from. Yes, I know there's bad people there that don't like us. But you don't negotiate fairly and freely with people you never talk to. And so Trump opened a door that had never been opened before, and Biden came into office and immediately shut it.
Yeah, the Saudi of today is a lot different than the Saudi of past.
I would agree with that.
It's changing very much.
It
much
is.
More open to the West and to anybody,
and
also being neutral.
And do they have problems with human rights? Yes. Do they have problems with extremist positions on women and others? Yes. How do we make that change? So the fact that Saudi Arabia is hosting this, good point. The fact that Saudi Arabia is hosting this is in itself significant. And no one's talking about that right now. Except right side. All right. Rubio says himself that we're going to find out here in recent days or in coming days whether or not Putin's serious. So the other question about why is Zelensky not at the table? Well, that's how mediations work. You don't sit in the same room and hash it out. Nothing happens then. Everybody postures. No one wants to say anything. They might hear us. What are we doing? I'm not negotiating in front of him. So you go down the hall and you have your own seat and you wait and the mediator comes in and you talk. But here's the other thing. The mediator sometimes goes into it already knowing everybody's position statements. The mediator comes into the room and says, what are you going to do? And here's why I think you have strengths and weaknesses. And then the mediator will go back down the hall and take the offer or the counteroffer to the next room. Zelensky is not there right now, and neither are the other European nations. But right now, what we're also seeing is a beta test. Rubio is flat out saying, the next few days, we're going to find out whether there really is an opportunity here, whether or not we're going to have a Putin who is actually serious. Now, here's one thing that did happen. All of this rhetoric about, well, we're not at the table, says all the other nations of Europe who are suddenly incensed that they're not the ones making the deals they didn't make when they had the chance. I mean, they just sat back and watched an endless check. Just a spigot of money. Just the Benjamins come slapping in from the United States. Meanwhile, they were buying their energy from where? Russia. Nobody wanted to make them mad. Guess what? Things are changing. But I will say this. What else is changing? NATO nations are on their heels because they just got scolded by Pete Hegseth, scolded by J.D. Vance, scolded by Donald Trump. And oh, by the way, oh, look, how about this? Foxnews.com, Dateline yesterday. NATO Secretary General says European countries will now have to spend much more to increase their defense spending. And they say they've already bumped it up $700 billion more than they did before Trump took office. Wow. I'd say the Trump effect is having an effect right now in Europe. The question is going to be, how do we establish peace? What do we do? What's this going to look like? I don't know. Who's going to give what? Who's going to take what? I don't know. I got several pieces of this that I'm going to put out there as where I think we're headed next. All right. So when we come back from this break, I'll tell you some of the physical on the ground aspects of where we're going next. Are there going to be U.S. troops there? I'll tell you in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. All right, I'm going to wrap this up, this whole thing with Ukraine and Europe and all of it. It's so, number one, is there a plan in place for peacekeeping troops? Allegedly. There is discussion right now about peacekeeping troops being supplied by, not us, European nations. Well, it makes more sense. Now, I will say this, Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who I'm not a big fan of, he did immediately commit to it. He said, we are ready and willing to put our own troops on the ground if necessary. That's interesting. But then you've got other European allies like Spain and Poland. They're like, we're not doing it. I mean, they're literally saying, we have no desire to be a part of that. How's this going to work out? I don't know. But it's not going to work out if some European nations get to play and some don't, or for that matter, agree to play and some don't. I think it's going to have to be an all-in thing. But then the question becomes, do you flag it under NATO? Probably not, because once NATO troops are attacked, you got a big hairy deal. So they're going to probably have to set up a new peacekeeping. We still have peacekeeping forces around the world right now. We still have, by the way, U.S. troops that go to the Sinai Peninsula. I got a family member that spent a year in a rotation at the Sinai Peninsula. Did you know there's a peacekeeping mission in the Sinai Peninsula? It's been there for decades. So yes, that is happening. The other thing that's happening is the art of the deal. So in the background of all of this is the question of what's happening with the money we sent you, Ukraine, and what's happening with the fact that we keep sending you money and we see no other way of adjusting or saying that it's of gain. There's a return on the investment, if you will, for the United States. Now, it shouldn't always be that way. We're not buying something per se. In essence, we were buying world peace. In essence, we were supposedly buying an end to a conflict, or at the very least, we were buying the ability of a nation to not be beaten down into submission by an aggressor, larger nation. Okay, put that aside for a minute. How about this? If we're going to do this, if we're going to supply some aid, because Trump says he is still going to send some aid to Ukraine, he's not abandoning them. He's just telling them that the endless checkbook is over. But what we do know is this. Apparently, Ukraine has a very large, untapped resource of rare earth minerals that no one has been able to get to yet. And maybe that has something to do with Russia trying to get Ukrainian territory.
I think that's a big part of it.
You think?
I mean, Ukraine is, I've heard some people claim it's like the richest part of Europe in terms of minerals.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. And so there's talk right now. Lindsey Graham was talking about this. I got a piece from CNBC. There's talk right now of an economic pact between Washington and Ukraine. We mine it. We get first dibs on buying it. We'll help you to process it. Oh, by the way, we're your best customer. If that's the case, then Russia immediately loses some of what it would have tried to take by gaining Ukrainian territory. If we can get an international compact in place that sucks some of the economic relief out that Russia is looking for by gaining Ukrainian territory, well, then at that point, is it really all about nationalism, Vladimir? Is it really all about NATO, Vladimir? I don't think it is. I think there's always been a dying Russian economy that desperately wanted what it saw next door as being viable. And I think that's about to go away. I think we're looking right now in the background. I guarantee you that Zelensky's saying, I'm not at the table. Meanwhile, he's over there on the phone with Rubio going, so if I give you the rare earth minerals compact, you watch. That's happening. And that, my friends, is the art of the deal. So suddenly, the boss steps in and says, we're putting an end to all this. You, the checkbook, it's closed. What's in it for us? You, Russia, come to the table. What do you mean you're not going to come to the table? You come to the table right now. I tell you what, if you don't come to the table, we're going to drill, baby, drill, and we're going to sell the rest of the world more gas and oil than you could ever produce, Russia. And guess what? That's going to cut off your economy. You're going to be isolated from the world. That's what's happening. See what happens when you project strength? This, my friends, is what you're looking at as peace through strength. They are working right now to restore peace to Europe. And they're doing it from a position of U.S. strength. What an amazing thing! Just saying. What you got? I see you're about to opine on me.
No, I agree with everything you just said.
Hallelujah.
Diplomacy has to actually, newsflash, it requires talking to the other person. It's like people were shocked that JD didn't just go over and say, Putin bad, Putin bad, Putin bad.
Yeah.
You don't get anything done doing that.
Don't.
Yeah, don't. And it's just like with the people who think that, I've seen some people on the left talking about, interesting that the Saudis get a seat at the table and Zelensky doesn't. And it's like, first of all, just because you don't like the country and what they do, human rights issues, doesn't mean that you don't work with them if they're offering to be a mediator. And it's just the same with Russia. It's like, just because you don't like Putin doesn't mean you can't talk to him.
That's exactly right. But don't forget too, Saudi Arabia is, we're negotiating with Saudi Arabia by letting them be the host,
mm-hmm.
by putting them in a position of being seen on the world stage as a player. No telling what we're getting out of the Palestinian crisis from Saudi Arabia there.
Yeah.
No telling what we're getting out of oil industries worldwide and the setting of OPEC's oil prices. There's no telling what we're getting out of them trying to keep Iran in check without us having to spend the dollars on it. So all said and done, yeah, we let Saudi Arabia do it, and we're gaining from that too.
Democrats are so immature in their geopolitical strategy of like, oh, that guy's bad. Don't talk to him. It's like there's no, obviously you don't like what they're doing, but like just labeling them bad and then not talking to them, you don't get anything done. So then the Ukraine-Russian war can keep going on for years. Congratulations.
It's a whole new day, and I'm glad. Yeah. All right. That's it. I'm through talking about it for now, but if you want to text in about it, you certainly can. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.